Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati. Thanks to Gary Dieter and Anthony Sherman for being with us. And thanks for making their life, making Jake's life very difficult, which we enjoy. Also, thank you to our baseball insider, Buster Olney. If you missed that conversation, you can check it out at 810WHB.com. Also, we previewed the Sweet 16 with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. We got Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Jack, our job shadow, wanted to say hi. You're going to go to opening day today. Who did you want to say hi to, Jack?
The Royals bullpen catcher, Alan D. San Miguel.
Okay. Do you know him or something, or...?
I'm trying to get something from him.
What are you trying to get from him?
You know the cards on the wall?
Yeah.
That.
Okay. That is a bizarre request, Jack. I'll be honest with you.
It is.
Yep. So, is that it?
Yeah, let's go Royals. Let's go get that win. Cole Reagan's on the bump. Let's go.
There you go. Thank you, Jack. That was our job shadow, Jack, with, I have no idea what just happened.
I don't either.
That's all right, Jack. There you go. It'll be memorable. All right. Jesse, how you doing?
Doing great. You know, I just want to tell you, Scott Fuchs is a great guy to talk
to. See?
He was really good. I'd go over to practice him every day, watch him coach.
You mispronounced his name, though.
I did not. I'm a former KU beat writer. I know exactly how to say his name.
It says rhymes with books.
Fuchs.
That was it.
Books with an F.
I'm going through this again.
No. Please, no.
I feel like you should.
I'm going to pronounce it right.
I know.
I'm on this, yeah.
You're a professional. You're a real professional.
Anyway, great guy. That's Scott Fuchs.
There we go.
There you go.
That was it.
That's what we're looking
for. That's very close.
That's what we're
Where do you want to go? Opening day?
Great coach.
Sweet 16? You know, Chiefs?
That Jayhawk shooting didn't quite come together, did it, Jesse?
No. No, I'll own that one. Hey, no, listen,
the first game.
They did shoot well. They just, you remember what I said? I said, there are teams out there, you can have a bad shooting day. Okay, you can advance to the Sweet 16. And then one team shot 16 of 37 from three, and the other one shot 8 of 15. The Jayhawks did not end up on the right side of that. But they actually shot really well for times in both of those games, to be honest with you. I was watching them shoot those threes against Sanford, and I was thinking about you, Nate, because KU certainly was doing better than 6 for 41.
It went from, in the first half of that Sanford game, I'm thinking, boy, Jesse's going to let Nate have it. And then in the second half of that game, boy, Nate's going to let Jesse have it.
Yeah.
And then in the first half of the Gonzaga game, boy,
they might make it.
Boy, Jesse's going to let Nate have it. And then the second half, oh, boy, Nate's going to let Jesse go back and forth. But ultimately, that's, you know, it's about what we expected, or at least, you know, I don't think anyone really, well, I digress. At one point, Nate had him in the Elite Eight, but then he walked that back after Kevin McCullough. We found out he wasn't going to play. But I don't think, I mean, even at halftime, I didn't expect the second half against Gonzaga to play out like that.
No, but, no, Nate was right on that one. Ended up right. It just... KU very, very much struggled to cover a ball screen, but you still don't expect 5 for 5 three-point shooting to start the second half. I mean, I don't know if you guys watched the Texas-Tennessee game. Like, Texas was playing similar defense to Kansas, only Tennessee made 1 of 21 threes.
Right.
It's like, you just hope sometime that some team just can't make them against you. And, that did not happen for Kansas, but they will. As Bill Self said, they will turn the page very quickly and hit the portal and move on to next season.
All right, so let's briefly talk about the Royals since it's opening day. And I think you're pretty rational and even keeled when it comes to predictions and projections. I think we can all agree that the Royals have a better roster.
Yes.
And we can all agree that the Royals play in a division that doesn't have a great team.
Yes.
Although most people feel that Minnesota is better than everyone else. We just don't know what the gap is.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they won 70 games, that would be a pretty dramatic improvement from last year. But boy, Buster, he picked them. He said he talked with Cyril Lang. He had him at 72 wins. Another guy had him at 71, and Buster has him at 79. I thought, boy, 79. That was in the overall. People can roll their eyes at 79 wins, but my God, what a dramatic improvement that would be from last year.
They had one of the biggest jumps. Them and the Orioles had the biggest jumps from the opening lines in Vegas from January. They opened up at 71, and they are sitting today at 74.5.
That's the win total right off the roll, 74.5?
Right now.
And so what do you think is realistic? Because they have to improve. They were so bad last year. But what's realistic to hope for as far as a win total for this team based on what they did in the offseason?
Well, you start with the Vegas over-under line, but I think what's encouraging is I'm reading real spots out here. This is not Royals-like right here. I'm reading the Washington Post. Neil Greenberg, one of the guys I really respect when it comes to sports betting and when it comes to sort of analytic-type knowledge. They have bold predictions out earlier this week. One of the bold predictions, Royals make the playoffs. Okay? I mean, guy I really respect. Eno Saris, excuse me, you guys, I know you guys have had him on 810 before. Super knowledgeable, knows a lot about pitching the game,
I like
for the
work.
Athletic. He does great work. Does his bold predictions. Royals young hitters will lead them to a wild card berth. One of his predictions yesterday. So, I mean, that to me is encouraging. There are things that are happening here that might seem like not just veering the car off the road with the Royals. Like, they didn't overreact to a 40 plate appearance sample size with Nick Prado and put him on the team. And that's what really good Major League Baseball teams have done for a long time now. It's just not what the Royals have done. And that's a good step. They locked in their franchise player to a long-term deal. That's what other teams that are in their markets do, but it's not what the Royals have always done. So I think there are really encouraging signs here, and probably the most encouraging signs is like some of the stuff where you pop up the hood and you look underneath and you see how the engine is running, and you're saying, hey, they've got guys that are developing pitches that are doing what other teams are out there, smart teams are doing to make themselves better and to improve the players that they have. And so I don't know about a win total. Obviously, like you said, Steven, if it's 79, I mean, that'd be a great year. And they would be in it to the end. They might make trade additions at the deadline. You would have this city fired up, not just for Chiefs football. So I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by what they did. I'm encouraged that I think John Sherman is motivated to get this thing right, too. I think he's an owner that is around and that wants to do things and that will open up the pocketbook. And I was looking at yesterday, Jeff Passan had his article about the payrolls. And I think the Royals are like 19th on there, which that's good for them. I mean, they're in a spot where they need to be competitive. So I think it's a lot of encouraging signs, a lot of reasons to be excited about opening day. It's just one game. They could lose 10-1. All those caveats apply, only one of 162. But as far as wins go, yeah, if they're in the upper 70s, that'd be a great year for them. But people I know and really respect that cover baseball and cover numbers, they think a lot more of the Royals and that potentially they could be onto something here that people aren't expecting. And that has to be an encouraging sign if you're a fan of a team, because the Royals, never going into a season, have been making these lists, at least in recent years.
Jake, give me where it is now as far as the for Cole Reagans to be Cy Young or Bobby Witt Jr. to be MVP.
Well, and you had said this morning, as it stands today, Bobby Witt Jr. is plus 1,300. And let me find the Cy Young.
I think earlier you said plus 900.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I got him at earlier in the week.
Okay. I've got it here. So Cy Young in the American League.
Still that. Plus 900 still.
There's only five pitchers.
Really?
Or four pitchers ahead of him. Kevin Gausman and Corbin Burns are plus 700.
That's crazy.
Luis Castillo is plus 800. And Framber Valdez is plus 800. And then Cole Reagans is plus 900. When you look at the AL MVP odds, Aaron Judge plus 550. Julio Rodriguez plus 600. Juan Soto plus 600. Jordan Alvarez plus 800. Corey Seager plus 1,000. Bobby Witt Jr. plus 1,300. So Reagans only has four guys ahead of him. Bobby Witt Jr. has five guys ahead of him. What do you think is more likely? What bet would you make if you were going to take a flyer on one of those bets? Cole Reagans to win the Cy Young or Bobby Witt Jr. to win MVP?
I'd probably go with Jake. I'd probably go with Reagans. Unless he bet Bobby Witt too, which I guess I didn't ask about.
No, I didn't.
Okay, all right.
Not yet, though.
All right, not yet. There we go. It's coming, guys. It's coming.
But that's 2 p.m. If you're talking about being in the top five or top six, that's a legitimate contender for the award.
When's the last time the Royals even had anything close to that?
That's what I talked to with Busterman earlier. With a straight face, you could say, yeah, the Royals have a Cy Young contender and an MVP contender, and they're both young with the hopes that you had not seen the best of them yet.
Let's be honest, MVP contender hasn't happened. I mean, I can think Greinke had that great year, whatever it was, about a decade ago, where he legitimately, you know, was in the race, should have been in the race. His ERA was just microscopic.
Kane finished third in the MVP 1 year, I thought, right?
That's the closest it's got to be. I mean, Alex Gordon had some good years, but like not to that level as a left fielder. I mean,
maybe Carlos Beltran going into the 2004 season.
I mean, that's and listen, me and you, Nate, can talk about Carlos Beltran.
Yeah,
it's 20 years ago. I mean, half the people listening to
2004 season, that's crazy.
Half the people listening to us are like, Carlos, who? Like, what? I mean, what?
Yeah.
So
yeah, 2015, Josh Donaldson won it. Mike Trout was second. And then Lorenzo Cain was third.
They talk about 20 years as a generation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's a generation ago that was Beltran. Yeah. Reagans is really interesting because you see the path to it. It's like he stays healthy, you know?
Right.
I mean, the dude pumps it from the left side at gas, and he's one of those guys that shapes his pitches and is constantly tinkering and looking in the offseason. How can I do this? How can I tunnel? How can I make a pitch that does this? He's one of those guys that really is into that stuff and, you know, looks completely overwhelming at times in spring training. So, yeah, if he stays healthy, you can see it. And to even get to that point, I mean, I talked about the Royals doing smart things. I mean, you get to that point because they traded away. They signed a guy last year at the bottom of his value. They built him up and fixed him somewhat in Aroldis Chapman to get him to the part where he is, you know, uncorking his fastball again. They trade him, and then they get this guy that we're talking about. Oh, my God, he could be a Cy Young. I mean, even in that part of the process, how many times have we talked in the past about, God, they should have traded Soria. They should have traded DeJesus. They should have, at the peak value, gotten some. The Royals did it. I mean,
and they actually, like how many times I feel like we've watched over the last 20 years, whatever, other teams pull off trades like this. And you're like, why can't the Royals ever have one like this?
Why can't they have one? Why can't they do it once?
Yeah. They could have given a little help with his IG account, you know, as opposed to some. Roll Chapman at his Instagram.
That would be a handful to handle that.
You don't remember that?
Well,
they kept him off social media enough because this spring he's been on way more than more photos.
Did you see that? Did you?
I read the stories. Right. I didn't see the photo video.
Yeah,
I didn't need.
It'll get a reaction out of you.
Okay, how about this? Yeah. We'll keep you abreast of the situation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at. Here's another prop bet. Let's see if we can get Jake all fired up over this one. Home runs. Bobby Witt Jr. over or under 28.5.
That's about right. That's about right. I mean, Kauffman's hard to get it out. I can go over.
Yeah.
I can go over.
There you go.
Now, the problem with these is most of them go under and nobody bets the under. But listen,
he had 30 last year.
Listen, Eno Saris,
30-30.
His big part of picking the Royals on this, and this is the same thing I talked about, Nate, where sort of like it's always been, why can't the Royals?
Yeah.
They have so many young players who hit the ball hard. And they have a big ballpark. We all understand that. But like, why? why can't we envision a scenario where MJ Melendez takes a big step? Young hitter coming into his prime. Bobby
that might
Witt,
be the biggest key to the whole season.
Vinny Pasquantino.
Michael Garcia.
Hits the crap out of the ball. Michael Garcia.
Let's go.
Michael Massey, once he gets, you know, healthy. I mean, Nelson Velasquez, once again, another guy that they pull out of thin air because of, you know, trades they make. That could be a really good group, guys. Like, that, those are six hitters, young hitters, hit the ball hard, coming into their own. Why not the Royals? And I think that's at least the point where we're at right now, which is we've got national people talking about this who are very smart in baseball, who are linked into what is going on with the game and the smartest practices of the game, and they're saying, why not the Royals? That's not a spot that the Royals are usually in.
The Royals we've known over the Dayton Moore era were one of the big differences that I see, the backup, what you were saying about the Prado thing. They evaluated guys last year. I feel like if Dayton Moore were still here, we would still be pushing some rocks up some hills. You know,
yeah.
And I'm not saying they've given up on Prado, but they're not going to just react, oh, we had a good spring. Let's give
Velasquez
another shot.
Had a bad spring. Prado had a good one. 40 plate appearances. Let's throw out the baby with the bathwater.
The only guy that theoretically earned a job because of his good spring performance is Alec Marsh. And that was really more, to me, another good sign, which is they're not going to keep trying to trot Jordan Lyles out there just because they spent money on him.
He's innings.
I think in the past, they would go, well, let's just keep running him out there. And they're like, no, it was really bad last year, and we got a guy that might be able to produce better. Let's put him in there. But they also they made evaluations on other guys and decided, you know what, we're going in a different direction instead of just running them out there over and over and over again until they're done with their service time, and then they move on. It is refreshing.
Yeah.
To see a team that goes out there and says, no, we're not going to use spring training to let some guy put up some numbers and then dream that that's really what he is as a big league baseball player.
Live betting during the show, I've just taken the over for Bobby Witt Jr. home runs.
Oh, God.
Over 20 and a half.
There we go.
While talking to Jesse.
Yeah. It's going
to
be 7 months before
the over. 20 and a half. But I feel very confident. Jake, yes?
Yes.
I should feel good about this.
You should feel great.
I feel awesome about this. He better hit a home run today. Let's go. start today. Let's get me going in the right direction. We'll be right back after this with Jesse Newell on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Well, the Chiefs. Is it official yet? Is it still not official? When the hell is this trade going to be official?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the rugby guy.
No, it's the luxurious. Do they officially have the salary cap space or not? I want to go shopping.
Yeah, it's a weird one because like the Titans haven't announced it, but like the insiders have said that the contract has been signed. So
the physical's been passed, okay.
Which would be the big holdup on this whole thing. But I don't think, as you're talking about, like the big check has not gotten to the bank yet. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem like
the old $19.8 million in cap space. How are they going to spend it when it does happen? Take a shot and let's go.
So I think what you have to start looking at is the future to start with, and there's the three names we know about, and we've talked about this: Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, and Nick Bolton. So that happens later in the offseason, but you still need money to be able to say, hey, you want to lock those guys up. If you get interior alignment, you draft, and I've talked with guys about this in the NFL, like it's a great place to secure those guys because you don't normally let them leave. You can extend them. They're happy here. And
the
so,
exploding guard market doesn't change your opinion on what it's going to take to sign Trey Smith?
So I don't – when the Chiefs – I think everybody, most people, understand why the Chiefs did what they did with Chris Jones, okay? It's hard to replace him. He does so much for their defense. He obviously backed up it with his play last year. But it creates a reality for them, which is there are things now that they can't do. You know what I mean? Like there are real financial situations that they are going to get themselves into here where they can't just go carte blanche and do whatever they want. So I don't know about Trey Smith. I mean, if I'm ranking those three guys, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm putting Creed at the top. I think Bolton's probably second compared to how they view him, and Trey Smith's probably third. Something else interesting is that I asked Brett Veach at the Combine if you you know, obviously Creed Humphrey is part of your long-term plans. So you envision him as a center or as a guard? And his answer was both. So what's interesting is we know that the guard market, like you said, exploded, Stephen. Could you lock up Creed as a center and then potentially move him to guard down the line? I mean, that would be beneficial for the Chiefs, obviously, from a numbers and dollars standpoint, or potentially think that, you know, if these snaps continue to not go well, that, that you have yourself a an elite guard and you paid him whatever you did at the very top of the center market. So those are options for the Chiefs. But, I mean, the one I keep coming back to is I can't believe Mike Dana's still out there. Like, what's going on with his market?
And bring him back.
It seems to me like there is a, again, this is not through sourcing, but, like, why would he not be out on a different roster right now unless there was some sort of wink, wink, nod, nod, like the other guys on the defensive line to say, once this money hits the bank, we'll come get you. And it would follow the MO of what the Chiefs have done this offseason. Again, every acquisition on the defense so far, help me if I'm missing one, every acquisition on the defense has been re-signing a guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Naughty, Jones, Tranquil, Pinnell, I'm missing one on the defensive line. Deion Bush. Like, it's all been just re-signing their own guys that they've had. Wharton. Wharton's the other one.
Yep.
So, I mean, the defensive mentality just seems to be run this thing back. They know the guys they got. They like the guys they got. Bring those guys back. A majority of them, not Willie Gay, but most of them.
Or Snead.
Or Snead. But we've talked about the Snead part of this, which is they've got a factory going in the secondary. I mean, they have, whether it's Steve Spagnuolo, whether it's Dave Merritt, whether it's their ability to draft and see talent in the draft. I mean, that one year, a couple years ago, they drafted five defensive backs, and all of them have come through and delivered on how they envisioned. So it's time for Joshua Williams. It's time for Jalen Watson. It's time for Nazee Johnson to step into that role, and they have the ability and have shown the ability to be able to backfill that position. And I think you feel much more comfortable backfilling Legarius's spot than you do Chris Jones's, where there's just not as many options.
You know, they could use another wide receiver. I wouldn't be mad if they added a veteran corner. They could use some different things. The only thing I'm really, J.K. Dobbins is visiting with the Chargers. I wouldn't mind taking a flyer on him. But the only guy that I'm the only spot I'm really concerned about, I really want to see them address is left tackle. I just don't know how they're going to address it. I think that should be the priority, right?
100%.
I mean, you could say, you could envision, okay, we added Hollywood Brown. We're going to add another guy in the draft. And there's your wide receivers. You could add another corner later in the draft. Say, okay, we're going to depend on our young guys and Nazee Johnson and Nick Jones taking a step forward. But you got to do something about left tackle, right? That has to be addressed. Do you think it's more likely that it's addressed with a veteran via free agency or trade, or addressed in the draft in the first round?
I don't know, because I think this goes like last year did, which is the Chiefs see how things play out with the draft. And this is, I mean, it's a really enviable spot there, because they need receiver, they need left tackle, but if there's a huge run on one of those positions, they don't have to force themselves into taking that. And so I think they're at a point where the first two draft picks they make, unless they trade up to get the guy that they love, the first round draft pick and second round draft pick should be tackle and wide receiver. Now, if it doesn't fall into that, you can go back and sign Donovan Smith again. And you know who he is, and you saw what you got from him last year, and it wasn't perfect. At some point, I agree with you, Steven. I think you got to address left tackle for the long term and feel stable about that position. You know what I mean? The Chiefs kind of just keep rotating guys in there,
right,
and trying to figure this thing out on the fly. And so, you know, quick plug, we'll have our first Chiefs mock draft 1.0 out next week in the Kansas City Star on Monday. And so I've got him mocked with an offensive tackle, which I think would make a lot of sense, mm-hmm. and then come back in round two with another receiver.
Look at Jake's face.
Uh-oh. Oh, he's loving it.
Okay, I was a little scared.
I was a little scared.
is it the guy from Arizona?
It's not.
Okay, Matt Derrick said he's old Mr. Short Arms over there. He ain't getting drafted by the Chiefs.
You know,
said arms too short. You know, cross him off the list.
There you go.
Tease it.
Herbie last year, mock draft 1.0. You know what you picked for the Chiefs in the first round?
Who?
Felix Anudike Uzomah. So there's a lot. My former colleague, Kirby Tielby, for people who don't know, who retired this past year. So there's a lot to live up to here. But sometimes the obvious pick can be the right one.
Right.
And so there is an offensive tackle.
All right. I'd be fine with it.
From BYU, who seems to be trending, was a little bit higher in mock drafts. Kind of made sense. It seems to be trending now back toward the end of the first round. And, you know, sometimes things make sense. He's a better pass blocker than run blocker. Sometimes things just make sense. He's supposed to visit the Chiefs this week. But, yeah, I'll give a little sneak preview. But Kingsley Suamata. So, but, again, we'll see what the Chiefs do. And potentially, because it's such a deep wide receiver draft, you can get somebody in the second round who you really like, who might have been a first rounder another year. Potentially could see the Chiefs going like they did with Rashee Rice last year. They get a guy who maybe isn't mock drafted up that high, but they really like, they've scouted well. And, again, they try to fix things a year in advance. Hollywood Brown most likely not going to be with the Chiefs a year from now, so replace his position now, get a guy in the system, and be sure to try to backfill that position because we know Patrick Mahomes needs another weapon on the outside.
I feel like I've been so vocal about Ladd McConkey, now it can't happen. But I want it to happen.
It could happen.
I want it to.
It could happen. We don't know how things are going to fall on draft day. Maybe there's a bunch of run of offensive tackles. It seems like really deep. If that's the case, and Ladd McConkey's sitting there, I mean, you could see it work for sure. And that's the enviable spot the Chiefs are in, is you just mentioned, Steve, like, they don't have 17 holes to fill. Like, they also don't have a gaping hole to fill. Like, if they don't get a left tackle,
they've got one game more who has experience, and you can bring back Donovan Smith.
That's what I'm saying. Like if they don't, it's not a crisis. You know what I mean? Like, they won a Super Bowl last year with Donovan Smith. It's not what you want. I mean, you'd prefer to have a younger player in there with Andy Heck, the offensive line coach, building and have something stable there for Patrick Mahomes for a few years he could be with. But they won a Super Bowl with that last year. So they are in a really good spot to have the value come to them in this particular draft. And it sure seems like those two needs are at the top of the list, but they don't have to force themselves into something they don't want to do. And that's, I think it's part of the reason they've been so successful. They usually don't put themselves in these spots where they are desperate come draft day.
I also feel like that third round pick that they got from Tennessee in 2025
could be trade.
I feel like, yeah, that will not stay in their pocket very long.
Good.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Back after this on WHB. All right, let's wrap up with Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Let's all wrap up with win total for the Royals. Jake has said the updated over-under is 74.5.
Correct.
Over or under, Jake Gutierrez?
Under.
Well, give me a number now.
72.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nate Eucaty.
What? Give me the over-under again.
74.5.
74.5. I'll go over.
Give me a specific number.
I like Buster 79. I'll just so I'm not being just like Buster, I'll say 78.
You're just being just like Buster. Jesse Newell, over or under 74.5.
Real quick, Jake's got Cole Reagans winning the Cy Young on a 72-win Royal team.
I do.
Tremendous.
Hot take.
Tremendous.
Hot take, Jake.
Season.
Love it. Yeah.
Love it. Guys, it's opening day. Let's go over. I'm telling you, I like the Royals offseason. I mean, there's certain things you can quibble with. You can say this. I like the direction they're going in.
What's your number?
Yeah, me too.
Listen, if I pursue some outrageous number, we're going to bring it back and be like, oh, blah, 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 blah.
Nah, we forget
everything. I'll go 77, which is over, and that's a high number. 77 mm-hmm. would be a good year for the Royals. 77.
I'm going to go over 76.
There you go.
How's that? All right.
Hey, if the Royals win 72 games this year, it's still a damn good year.
Well, it's a big jump. Yeah. Yes.
For where they were.
Right.
So, hey, I hope I'm wrong.
I mean, there's not a gigantic. We're all in the 70s.
Maybe Ian Osiris is right. Maybe Neil Greenberg is right. Maybe the Washington Post is right.
No, but the thing about them is you can dream on it because they're such high upside.
Yeah.
You're talking about a guy who could have a Cy Young year. There's a guy that could be an MVP.
Pascal could be great. Right. Melendez could be great. All the, I mean, Bobby Witt could take another step. I mean,
I'm going to say it again. Michael Garcia, that's my breakout guy, and I think he's a star.
Yeah.
He's a stud.
Hope springs eternal.
Okay.
Opening day.
Oh,
gotta love it.
Smell the grass.
Gotta love it.
Yeah. We have quite a few people in the parking lot smelling grass, especially in the state of Missouri, buddy. Yeah. Hit the nail on the head.
Oh.
You going in the game yet? No, I'm still smelling grass. Thank you, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. When's the mock draft?
Monday. 1.0. 1.0. Season 2, baby.
Drafts. Hey, everyone, all together, go Royals!
They don't win, it's a change.